side of the glass, on the other side of the Garden State. We are the Tri-City Sports Guys coming to you live from beautiful Norwalk. Neil's joining us from the Hoboken studio. Tony D's just holding down softball like he always does. He's the one athlete in the group, apparently, that still plays intramural sports. Lot to get to tonight. Phones are going to be down for anyone that's calling in. I know we don't technically get to the calls, but if you do call in, just know we're not picking up the phone. Without Tony D here, I got too much call. I got too much on my plate, Neil. You know what I mean? I got these two little alarms. I got two computers going. There's all kinds of things going on. A lot going on in the sports world, Neil. We were hoping to get a call from our good friend, our dear friend, former intern extraordinaire, James Tita, a.k.a. JT, out of Connecticut School of Broadcasting. He also has a softball game tonight.
We're in the wrong business.
Slow pitch softball is slowly killing the Tri-State Sports Guys. And the original host quit to go coach 13-year-olds little leaguers or whatever.
I tell you, all this physical activity is
down. Yeah, I got no time for that. I got to be sitting right here, the Perry Evans Bar and Grill, staring into your beautiful eyes. Let me fix this camera here, and we're good to go. So we got a lot to get to. We got to start with the NBA Finals. Did you stay awake for the game last night, Neil?
I did.
Mm-hmm.
I had a date. So.
Did you? How'd that go? Can we get take a little quick 30 seconds? Anything good? Second date in the works?
Well, this is potential. This is potential. I'll say that.
Yeah? Good for you, man. I'm excited for you.
We're a string of dates. We're entering like the double-digit range of
most. Is that right? One for the second film? Yeah.
So I got home around, I guess, 10:30, 11 o'clock, and I don't know what's going on in my brain lately, but I can't do math.
Yeah.
And I saw that it was 8277, and I was like, oh, it's another blowout. Yeah.
Yeah. It's another blowout. Okay. Well, I watched the vast majority of this game. Once my daughter went to sleep, I basically watched the whole thing. So I might have missed the first couple minutes. I just settled in on the couch. I watched it. And, it's just exactly how the rest of the series has gone. It was, you know, a good first quarter. End of the half, all of a sudden, the Spurs go on a crazy run to take a lead. They get up even bigger. I think they were up at 1.17 points in the third quarter. They go into the fourth quarter up 10 points. And, Twitter and Facebook were exploding with people bashing LeBron James because he had a bad game going and he had a horrible third quarter. He had a bad shooting night to start. And a friend of the show, actually, we do the show at O'Neill's with him, Matt Scully, wrote, June, what was the date yesterday? It's 18th, 2013, the day that the conversation that LeBron James is the best player of all time ends. And that was right between the third and the fourth quarter. And it sparked this huge, conversation on Facebook going back and forth. But it was like LeBron James saw that Matt Scully's post and just decided, all right, I'll just be the best player in the world right now. And I think he accounted for whether it was him scoring or assisting on the first 16 points of the fourth quarter and single-handedly got him back in that game. And then that fourth quarter was just insane. The back and forth and then, the Heat grabbed that lead. You thought there's no chance in the world the Spurs are coming back, right? I mean, you hadn't watched the whole game. Once the Heat grabbed that lead after being down 10 at the end of the third quarter, did you think there was any chance that the Spurs were going to bounce back?
Judging from the previous games that I've watched where, one team just goes on a run and the other team can't respond, I didn't expect it to be a blow down the stretch like was. That said, the Spurs showed a lot to me, and the Heat showed a lot to me as well. I think both teams really responded well, and to me, that's the kind of play that, for most of the fourth quarter, that was the kind of play that I expect from what LeBron James pretty much all the top rating. So for it's just weird to me that he can go three quarters in a major game like this and just kind of mess the bed, if you will. And then all of a sudden he decides, all right, fine, it's about to go to the season.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what everybody was saying on Twitter. You know, LeBron lost LeBand and all this crazy stuff. I mean, just get into all the quirkiness that happened. You know, just in the fourth quarter alone, you know, you had Mike Miller's shoe falling off. He chucks it towards his bench and then drains a three. Yeah, LeBron's headband falling off and him not putting it back on, which is now leading to the whole debate. Is he going to wear the headband in game seven? Which I can't imagine that he will. You know, I can't imagine that he will. There was just a million things. The crazy Tony Parker who had been faltering kind of in the second half and really didn't have a good game, drains that improbable three and then gets away with the travel there on that two to put them up, you know, to cap off his little personal five over run there. And then just, you know, the end of the game, the missing of the free throws, as the guy is saying that they have just, it was the best free throw shooting Spurs team in like 35 years. They get two guys, normally Salas on the line, and Ginobili and Kawhi Leonard, miss crucial foul shots. LeBron gets the 1-3 that he needed to get, misses the other one. You know, Chris Bosh, who's been getting killed for his play in the playoffs, and really since he's gotten to Miami, been getting killed, comes up with a huge offensive rebound, kicks it out. And then, I mean, who better to have in your hands than UConn's own Ray Allen? You know what I mean? I mean, that's all I'm thinking. That's UConn strong right there, my man.
I would not have liked to have been a sports writer for that last thing. Because to me, it was like the headline is LeBron was down the stretch. I mean, he had two awful turnovers, and then he had the opportunity to tie it, missed the three. Luckily, they got the rebound and came back out, so he nailed it. But, I mean, the storyline was, like, LeBron saved the Heat, and then he just destroyed the Heat down the stretch, and then he comes back and, you know, there was a play in overtime, I think it was overtime, where Ginobili drives to the bucket, heavily guarded, tries to kick back out, LeBron intercepts it, going for like the lay-in, possibly an and-one. Danny Green makes an unreal play.
That was an unbelievable play to strip that ball clean. And he got elbowed in the face.
Yeah, LeBron elbowed him in the face. Yeah. And then for LeBron, Craig Powell.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, like I was saying, I was going back and forth with some people on Facebook all night, which is actually, you know, as annoying as social media can get. Things like that, it's like you're watching a game at a bar, you know what I mean? Like, I'm sitting on my couch having a drink, watching the game by myself, and I'm able to sit there and talk about the game with 20 friends live time on Facebook. And, you know, I know people do it on Twitter, too, but, you know, your Twitter feed gets crazy. On Facebook, it just pops right up. So we're going back and forth. And there were so many things that frustrated me about LeBron James. I mean, every star cries about fouls. That's a given. I mean, Michael Jordan cried about fouls. The difference between LeBron James is he will drive to the hole, miss a layup, and lay on the ground complaining about a non-call while the team's running up the court. And you saw it time and time again where the Spurs were getting easy buckets 5-on-4, and LeBron James is sitting on his ass down at the end of the court. I don't know a lot of superstars that do that. I mean, you don't see that. I mean, Tim Duncan complains a lot, but he'll complain as he's sprinting down the floor, you know?
Yeah.
That's the difference. And that's what makes LeBron, you know, I had this, like, love-hate relationship with LeBron. I loved him when he came into the league. Then I absolutely hated him after the decision. And then this year I started to come around, and I'm like, I like this guy. I really do. But then you watch that game, and you're like, God, why are you doing stuff like that, you know? And then, you know, think about if it wasn't for the crazy three, he would have been known for that, you know, the turnovers he had down the stretch there in regulation. And, you know, his team bailed him out, but he did that stretch of play for the first 8 or 9 minutes of the fourth quarter was insane. And there's nobody that I'm telling you, I mean, look, I know Jordan is great. I don't know if there's anybody I've ever seen that could do something like that. Just sit there and be part of 16 consecutive points. We know the other team is just trying to stop LeBron James. And so he's finding the open guys. Granted, Chalmers and Mike Miller are hitting the open threes, but he was the one getting them the open threes. It was just crazy. But just to go back on the series as a whole, have you ever remembered in any major sport, a seven-game series going the way this is gone? We had a good game in game one, and then just blowout after blowout, back and forth, blowout like this. Typically, when you go game seven, you know, you're talking about a lot of very hard-fought games. There's only been two hard-fought games in this whole series, one and six. I don't ever remember in anything, and you would think baseball would lend itself to that because, you know, it's all about your starting pitcher that night, but I don't even remember baseball matchups where you see, you know, a 7-1 game one way, then a 10-2 game the other way, then an 8-3 game the other way. Yeah, I've never seen anything like it. It's crazy. How could you explain that?
I can't. And, you know, that's what's so bad about me is that, you know, I've always been the kind of person where I can pretty much pick something apart, analyze it, and really get to the core of something, and I really can't understand. You know, and this is where it comes back to the whole debate of, is it the coaching or is it the players? You know, the fact that Danny Green, you see the secret weapon that Tom has in the back pocket that comes out just firing buckets left and right, you know, NBA record style. And then they shift their game plan to recovery. I mean, the one point that I wanted to make that I thought was interesting about LeBron was that they decided to put him on Tony Parker.
Yeah, and he locked him down.
And it was really effective. I mean, you know, we've hailed Tony Parker throughout the series because even with the tweaking hamstring, he just is able to make something out of nothing. He's able to slip through the crevice, if you will, and make it look so smooth. Like everyone else is standing in cement, and he's able to glide through and make plays. And that's why it was so. I'm not a Heat fan, and I was like, I promised myself that I wouldn't get into this series, that I wouldn't get excited, that I wouldn't get pumped up, and that Bosh has to go and block Parker's shot, and then Al makes that ridiculous three. There's no way as a sports fan in general that I couldn't get excited to jump off my couch, because it's Bosh redeeming himself after basically crapping his entire playoffs. He was horrible at the Pacers, and he was not doing that well at the Spurs. And for him to come back and get that crucial rebound down the stretch and that block, even though, you know, I'm not a huge fan of Bosh, was like that redeeming storyline.
Yeah.
And then for Ray Allen, who has been demonized, villainized, vilified by the Boston sports media, and rightfully so, for him to come back and, you know, everyone's kind of discounting him or pushing to the wayside, saying like he's not really a factor, and then he's able to make one of the biggest shots in playoff history. So it's a really weird series in that, you know, I don't want to get into it, and I'm like, thus far up until last night, I was like, this is kind of a blah, other than game one where it came down, it was like, kind of, there's nothing, you know, people are making the mountain up, molehill, and now, after this game, I mean, game seven has got to be unreal for comparing games.
It's must-watch television, and, you know, there's so many storylines. There's the, you know, Spoelstra gets zero credit as a coach. And you mentioned about the fact that he puts LeBron James on Tony Parker and how well that worked out. You know, you meant there was that chess match of him starting Mike Miller, and then Pop comes back and starts Manu Ginobili in game five, and there's that. And I don't know whether Spoelstra's a great coach, but he doesn't get enough credit. He's not a I mean, there's people that think he's Vinny Del Negro and he's just a terrible coach. Who's the reason why this team isn't this, you know, 70-12 year in and year out team. I think he's, you know, I think there are times when he doesn't do well motivating a team, and I think that he's not a big enough personality to take on LeBron James when he sits and sits on the floor. But I don't think there's a coach in the league at this point, unless maybe you're Greg Popovich, that could do that. And then you got Greg Popovich, who I don't even think it's close. We've said it a million times. He's the best coach in the league. But he made a lot of questionable decisions down the stretch. And it's almost like people on ESPN and TNT are, like, scared to even say that. Like, oh, my God, I know it's sacrilegious to say. But and that just shows you that, A, coaching in the NBA is really hard. And, you know, when O was still the co-host, we had this big debate over which head coaches in major sports played the biggest impact. And he had an argument with me that he thought Major League Baseball managers were more important to their team than NBA head coaches. And I thought he was completely insane. Because I genuinely think, I mean, major league coaches win or lose you possibly a couple games. As much as I hate Terry Collins, I don't think that another coach is going to come in there and make this team a above 500 team. But NBA coaches, little decisions you got to make in the heat of the moment, split second. Baseball is so slow, there's not a lot of split second decisions you're ever making. And
well,
it's.
That's why, you know, you bring up a great point because we lost Pop for all his wise moves and the way that he was able to grab a hold of his attention, muster that authority over them. But then you look at last night's game, not putting Crocker in at the end. Danny Green was, I think he was the only shooter on the floor. And then, when they have, when they're coming back, 5 or 1 second left on the clock, Ginobili drives across the half, not four times, they don't call a timeout.
Yeah.
They don't get anything up. They just send Ginobili to the hole, and that's where, obviously people were saying he was fouled. I don't think he was fouled. I don't think you call that. And a lot of people were saying he was traveling as well. So I guess, that was weird for me because I was thinking to myself, everyone was saying, okay, they got a timeout in their pocket. Going to cross that goal, going to call a timeout, going to come up with a play. Fortunately, they were able to get the ball again later, but to not have Parker in the game is just really weird.
Yeah, that was crazy, and not have Duncan in on that last play where, Bosch winds up getting that offensive rebound. You think if Duncan's in that game, boxing Bosch out, possibly he doesn't get that rebound. That was an interesting decision. The only other point I'll make going off of Pop, and then we'll finish up on Pop, but I mentioned something on Facebook last night on our Facebook page. All day, including Deadspin, who led the charge on this huge conspiracy theory that the NBA was going to make the Heat win the game so they get game 7 and blah, blah, blah. And they brought that ref in, that controversial ref in, the ref this game, and all this stuff. And if you watch this game through three quarters, it was a poorly officiated game, kind of both ways. It was actually not awful. It's like any basketball game. Half the plays could be called a foul. It's like holding penalties in football. Nobody calls travels, and nobody called a travel last night. But I would have to say, if I was, judging the scorecard, I would have said the Spurs got more calls than the Heat. And like you, I'm not really rooting for either team. So I felt that the Spurs got more calls than anybody. And then the debate of at the end of the game, when Ray Allen does make that three, they've gotten just crazy about these, have to review twos and threes at the end of the game. The guy was 3 full inches behind the arc. Why can't a ref be looking at where his feet are? They essentially gave the Spurs a timeout. Now, I've heard the other end of the spectrum where people are saying that actually hurt the Spurs because the Spurs could have got out in transition with 5 or 6 seconds left and moved the ball. I thought it helped them because it allows them to draw up a play. Granted, it was a non-play because Parker wound up just taking a crazy shot because it was well defended. But, I mean, why I get why they have that in place. But when there's no doubt about it, why do they have to call a timeout there? We saw in the NCAA tournament, if you remember, how many times these teams got timeouts at the end of the game because the refs, all of a sudden, they don't know how to look at where somebody's behind the arc. That wasn't even a borderline call. I mean, it was a three-pointer.
Yeah, I mean, the camera angle that they had for us fans at home, I didn't know.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's people running in front of the camera, but the ref was standing right there.
Yeah. But that's the thing. They're so shell-shocked from not calling in plays or calling for these plays and having backfire that I think that they'd rather be super safe than sorry.
But in basketball, it genuinely gives an advantage to the offense to be able to draw up a play. I mean, the Spurs had no timeouts left. They were going to have to inbound on the ball and go on the fly. Now, there are people that are the Spurs fans are going to say that hurt them because they could have, the Heat were all under the basket and the Spurs could have got out in transition ahead of them and done that. I just think that will always benefit the offensive team if you were able to draw a play with the best coach in the league. But getting back to the coach, and then we'll move on to other sports. I've come to the – and I hate hypocrites more than anything. There's plenty of things I could disagree with you about, disagree with Tony. I don't have any problem about disagreeing with anybody about anything. I just get so frustrated with hypocrites, whether it's in sports, politics, anything. And I found out after last night's game that I am the biggest phony there is. I'm the biggest hypocrite there is, Neil, and I'll tell you why. I'm watching the post game, and I'm watching all these guys breaking things down, and then they go, we're going out to Greg Popovich for his press conference, and I was, like, giddy with how excited I was about how much of a jerk he's going to be. And if that was Bill Belichick giving those answers or Tortorella or one of those guys, I would be all over him talking about how much I hate it. But did you watch him? The first two guys to get asked questions had thick Hispanic accents. And he one word of the first guy. The second guy, once he started talking, he rubbed his brow like, oh, God, what are you talking about? And then he asked the question, why didn't you foul? And he goes, oh, that's that European question, right? Yeah, we don't do that. Next question. It was just the best. Why am I a hypocrite? Do you look at me as like, oh, Mike, he's full of crap. He doesn't know. He's as full of invested in anything else. What do you think? I mean, am I wrong? Is it just why do I accept Pop doing that kind of thing? But if it was somebody else, and I don't, I like the Rangers. I don't know why I hated Tortorella doing it.
I feel like it's more genuine with Pop. You know, I feel like he's not doing that to face the media because
he does. Now you're in the entertainment industry. I mean, you're an actor. You have a pilot in development and all. I'm no casting director, but I came to the realization last night after this game. Now I'm wide awake at midnight. If they were going to do a biopic about the Spurs and Greg Popovich, you know who would have to play him? Now you're going to need a nice makeup guy. So it doesn't do his looks, but just who could deliver the lines? Only one actor in Hollywood who could deliver those sarcastic lines like that. Vince Vaughn. Vince Vaughn would have to play Greg Popovich. With that, like, yeah, we don't do that here. Like, that just, everything he does is kind of like, is he messing with me? Or is he being serious? Vince Vaughn would nail Greg Popovich. You know that.
Yeah, I was picturing something more along the line of, like, Brian Dennehy or, who's that actor he got? Like, Anthony Hopkins, he's, I can't remember the actor, but I can. Is like crystal clear in my head.
Walter, what's that guy, Moth Out? The guy from Grumpy Old Men?
Yeah,
I mean, he can do it. I don't know. I think that Vince Vaughn would nail it. I'm gonna pitch that to whoever needs. When we finally get blacked out, and I've got a couple more great ideas, I'll talk to you off air because this is slowly turning into a HBO or Showtime show. We'll, once we get our foot in the door and we become like the next Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, we're going to do this. And I'm going to say, I got another pitch for you. Vince Vaughn as Greg Popovich. Make it happen.
It's called Pop.
Pop, that's it. And it's just 90 minutes of interviews. Yeah, maybe he's like captured by like Al-Qaeda and they're just trying to interview him, like interrogate him, and he's just giving like one word sarcastic answers for 90 minutes, and then we win the war against terror. Something like that. I don't know. Send them over. All right, we were going to get a call, like I mentioned earlier, from James Tita, JT, intern extraordinaire. He, like I said, he got a softball game. He was going to be our hockey guy. Now, I don't watch hockey, but I do admit that the playoff hockey is very exciting and the Stanley Cup is extremely exciting. With that all being said, I watched once it got to overtime in game one, and I stayed up as long as I could and fell asleep in game one. I haven't watched any of game two and game three, but as far as anyone who is even the smallest of hockey fans goes, this is shaping up to be one of the greatest Stanley Cup Finals of all time. Are you watching it? Are you watching highlights? Are you following on your phone? How into this are you? As a more of a hockey fan than me, but I wouldn't say you're a James Tita level hockey fan.
Well, my father
from Boston, this lovely lady? No.
New Hampshire.
Ah, all New England. It's all the same.
Yeah.
You say you do a podcast out of New England? Like, is that like you're in? You're basically Norwalk's favorite person right now.
That was my opener. That was like, hey.
Have you been to Norwalk?
yeah, so I have an investment interest in it. You know, I just feel like it's the first time, especially for the first time, two original six teams are in the finals facing off. And, you know, two cities that are just known for their sports and their tough cities, Boston, Chicago. And, you know, personalities on each side, and the media is feeding into it, and you know, I get into it. I mean, I like hockey because, you know, other people say soccer, apparently soccer is more popular than hockey, but, you know, I get into it for the hits, I get into it for the announcer, mostly. If the announcer wasn't there cranking out his one-liners, I'd probably lose interest, but I mean, I forget his name, but there's Jerry Thorne, the previous announcer, the guy they have at NBC Sports. It's just like epic the way that he announces.
That's a hard sport to announce, how fast it moves. And the comparison to soccer is ridiculous. As much as I make fun of hockey, the speed of a hockey game, and if you ever see a game live, the appreciation of how athletic these guys are, you know, as a person who, I don't know how to ice skate. Do you know how to ice skate, Neil?
I do, and I almost died.
And now I'm deaf in one ear, saving my brother.
But in high school, you know, that was the thing. It was a ring, and, you know, skate around. I don't know if we were trying to stop the running or over there, but, you know, so I was, you know, trying to, like, crank up the speed a notch, you know, I've seen enough of the rocket pop out for it, you know, I got it in the end.
Get a nice burst.
I tried to kind of get up a notch, and I ended up barreling into our high school hockey coach who happened to be there. So I had to put me in a body bag.
So you actually went to, like, a rink, like a real rink with boards and everything, and played hockey? Like, we have pond hockey and stuff here, but I don't know. We didn't have a rink, you know, nor all growing up. But that's pretty cool. Actually, that would be exciting. I think that would be a very fun game to play, but I just don't know how to.
I want to be a goalie. You know, that was my. I was living in Massachusetts. I watched plenty of the Bruins growing up, and you know, then we moved to the Providence area. And I watched a bunch of the PG Bruins games there, and I wanted to be a goalie. And that was my, you know, if you would ask me at age 11 or 12, you know, who are your favorite players in the NHL? They're all goalies.
Yeah.
All players. So, yeah, that was something. And I just kind of lost interest in that over the years, but this is kind of piqued my interest. I was interested last year in the class three up through there. But, you know, this has been, Devil's King was okay. If I were a Devil's fan, I don't know that would be into it. But this one, this series has been, like, amazing. Because of, you know, just the goals, the strategy, the fact that the Blackhawks are powerless on the power play, which is amazing. Tuukka Rask, the character, his name alone is fun to say. And they can't make an announcement. We're not saying his full name. They have to say Durant every time.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's interesting to see, like, you know, I'm fascinated by Zdeno Chara and the fact that he's so large and able to command such presence on ice. The fact that Brad Marchand is getting in a fight every play, every time he's on the ice.
Yeah.
You know, and these guys are starting to go at it. They're starting to get a little punchy. And, you know, that's what the NHL is all about. A lot of people run those plays. You know, I could do without the triple overtime. I think it's, you know, the one overtime.
Yeah.
Other than that, I'm doing it.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, the Bruins fans is a really great fan base, so it's exciting to see. Like, I know there's a lot, when we had Cowboy from O'Neill's host a show with me a few weeks ago, he was talking about the Bruins, like the folks down in O'Neill, Tennessee Bruins fans, more than Rangers fans, which Norwalk is a pretty dominant Ranger town, I would think, but the Bruins fans come out, man, and he said that the crowds down in O'Neill's for these games have been big, and it's just a crazy fan base. It's, you know, rivals the Rangers, and the Rangers have a huge fan base, and I'm sure up in Boston it's just insane, you know, what's going on up there, and you know, somehow. I mean, the Red Sox are having an unbelievable season against all odds when nobody's picking them to do anything. And the Bruins are stealing the show up there right now for the time being until the end of the Stanley Cup final. So it is exciting. As much as I make fun of hockey, I'll try to watch some games because I do like watching playoff hockey. The triple overtime stuff, it is just intense. You are literally pins and needles. There's nothing like it, in anywhere around. So it's super exciting. But that's plenty of hockey talk, I think. We didn't really add that much. We just basically said, yeah, I like hockey. You like hockey? I like it when they skate real fast. I like that one guy's really tall.
Yeah, basically.
That guy's got a cool name. Yeah, they're like, these guys break it down over at TSG. My God. Belly Barry Melrose. So let's get into some stuff that we do know about and we actually can add some insight to. And that's the New York Mets. Now, they come off the devastating loss after long rain delay Monday night. Dylan G throwing a shutout. And it was a crazy stat. You know, he's the first Met since 1963 to have a shutout going into the ninth inning and losing on a walk-off home run. And Roger Craig was the last guy to do that. So it's a rare thing to happen, to go into a ninth inning. And I'm sure it's happened with other teams, but for a Met pitcher to go into the ninth inning with a shutout and then lose on a walk-off home run in the ninth, pretty rare feat. Ends at 1:20 in the morning, and I posted, they have a legitimate chance of losing 3 days in one calendar day. And I didn't think that would happen. I thought, Harvey would squeak one out. And then you see Harvey's just utter dominance through seven. Got the no-hitter broken up on a botched play with a bunch of people out of position. And then he started to fade there in the eighth, and they pulled that out. And then you have Wheeler. I mean, I think it was so big for Harvey to have that game and for the Mets bullpen to hold it because it took all the pressure off of Wheeler's start, because if he was now asked to prevent that crazy three-loss in one calendar day thing, it adds a lot more. And you saw him come out with some jitters, but you could see – this is the first time I've seen him outside of spring training, which is hard to judge anybody. That guy's got electric stuff as well. He's lanky. He's not as, like, husky as a Harvey, but you can tell he's a tall guy, lanky guy, nice power fastball, nasty breaking ball. Command was off, which has kind of been his problem down in the minors this year. But you got to love what you saw from Wheeler on his first start, no?
Yeah, his word coming into this when they traded for Wheeler was that eventually it's going to be better than Harvey.
Yeah.
That just shivers up your spine knowing that, because Harvey's exceeded my expectations. I didn't think that he would be like at this level. It's sad to have his record is what it is, because if they were able to hold on even maybe three of those games, he would be the forerunner, in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, he would be in position, and he still might be, to start the All-Star game. Sure, they won half of those no decisions, half of those games where he's come out and been great. I wonder, the quick question is, does the start that Harvey had help or hurt Wheeler? In that, you do have an example of somebody who's going through the same thing that Wheeler's going to be going through, making the jump to the major leagues and the pressure and the hoopla. I actually think it kind of hurts Wheeler a little bit, because now Met fans are expecting, well, look what Harvey did, and this guy's supposed to be better. You better be as good as Harvey. But he came out and dominated against a good lineup, man. That's a strong lineup. A lot of power in that lineup. To shut down the Braves for six innings is tough to do. And you got to be extremely excited what you saw. What I worry about is this a little bit with the Mets and those two big guns. And then I'll even throw Neese in the mix, because now you have a core of good young pitchers. And I include Neese as being young. I think he's only 26 or 27. If people now envision this staff as being like, oh, we're set for the next decade. These guys are young, and they're young, early 20s. We're set for a decade with two top of the rotation guys. So even if we're not ready next year, that's fine, because we'll be ready in 2015, because these guys will be that much better. And I think that history shows you that these windows, even when you have two dominant pitchers, are a lot smaller than that. You look at the Giants, you look at with Kane and Lincecum, what people thought 3 years ago, that's a decade long, and then you see Lincecum fall by the wayside. You look at Los Angeles with Kershaw and Billingsley. You don't even know if Billings is ever going to pitch again. you know, Lester and Buchholz. You can go down the list of guys, you know, whether it even be trade. When you look at, like, the Rays with Price, Shields, and Garza, three young guys. Now all you've got left is Price. The window is not as long as these Mets fans think, and I'm hoping that the organization doesn't think. And I almost fear that the organization isn't going to go all in next year because they're like, we don't have to throw everything on the table in 2014 because we still got these two young guys. It's so unpredictable with young arms. I mean, look at Jabba and Hughes, you know, from 07, 08. That was going to be the cornerstone of the Yankees' rotation. And next year, neither of them will be on the Yankees, and including Ian Kennedy, who's been gone for several years. So, you know, the window is not as long as these Mets fans and even the organization wants to think. You come up with this big grand scheme of like a 7-year plan. I'll tell you, if these guys are ready to be aces next year, you better back them up with some solid 4 or 5 in your rotation, better bullpen than they've shown, and some guys that could get some freaking hits with runners in scoring position because, you know, why are you looking towards 2015 and beyond? Let's look at 2014. You got two young starters ready to be stars. Give me something to work with, no? Numbers are always skewed. I mean, Neuenheit had 10 home runs in like 14 games. Now. So, and let's get quickly. We'll get back to Harvey and Wheeler, but the Neuenheit home run when they score 4 in the 9th to win it, and then you have Bob freaking Costas. If there's a guy in the sports world that needs to shut up, we had our top 10 least favorite people, and he made my top 10, and he was high up there. I mean, for him to say that it's the end of Western civilization because a mediocre team is celebrating a loss. This is a team that now you can't celebrate a 4-run bottom of the 9th with a walk-off 3-run home run by a guy who just got called up. You can't celebrate that. We're just no longer allowed to have fun watching sports anymore. You can't celebrate that. It goes to, like, clearly he's a Yankee fan. Remember when the Mets won this 4-game set against the Yankees? And everybody's like, oh, that's your World Series. I don't know one Met fan that was like, this is the best thing. But it was just, it's exciting. It's exciting to sweep the Yankees. You can't be excited about it now. You just have to be like, oh, well, I can't get excited because the Mets stink. Then why watch any sports? Unless the team's in first place, let's just not watch sports. It's so stupid. This is the guy that people, smart people, are saying this guy could be the next commissioner of baseball, Bob Costas. Can you imagine that? He is the worst, Neil. And things like that make me even more upset because we both know we put on a great show week in and week out. And we're over here rubbing two sticks together trying to get, you know, some downloads. And this guy's at the top of the industry, and he makes comments like that. Everything is his editorialized, like, try holier-than-thou thing that he says, and he is the most annoying and stupid person in sports. Both. Yeah.
I mean, there comes a point where, and this is happening right now, I feel like this is happening right now, the fact that, you know, we have the advent of the internet and it's become popular and you have more voices contributing to the conversation. You have more and more people, you know, basically basically crapping all over Joe Buck and Bob. So Harvey thinks that it's good because it puts them in their place and the greater, you know, the insular world of sports media to get to perspective and say, hey, this guy might not be as great as we make him out to be, and that we shouldn't put him on a pedestal. But at the same time, it also picks him up a notch because it shows how polarizing he can be, right? And it shows that, you know, what's greater than people who love figure, people who hate a figure, the hate contributes to the ratings. So I don't think Bob Costas is going away. I don't think there's a shot in hell that he's
commissioner. No, I don't either. But people talk about it. You got maybe like Jason Stark and Greeny and these guys who are borderline in the same boat as Bob Costas. These are supposed to be the experts of the sports world.
Yeah, that's the point. I mean, Greeny, to me, seems like a Bob Costas training, the way that he kind of, you know, acts all offended and cool. I guess the people and the personalities are real, that can talk to you like a real person.
Jimmy the Greek! Yeah, but no, exactly. I mean, that is not, even if you're not the biggest Craig Carton fan, I don't know if you are anyone, I like him, but if you were at a bar and, you sit down at the pub and there's Craig Carton, you could sit there and have a conversation about sports with him. You know, most guys, like, you know, on The Fan, I even think, as much as I hate Mike Francesa, I can have a sports conversation with Mike Francesa, get in an argument and let him talk over me. Can you imagine trying to have a conversation with Bob Costas and having any enjoyment at all? I don't even think if I tell him I'd want a picture with him. If he asked for a picture with me, I'd be like, nah.
Well, first of all, he's a fool.
Yeah. He's robotic and annoying, and that one thing just aggravated me to no end, that he would try to just, I mean, out of nowhere, just bring in the Mets and just, like, rain on their parade about them celebrating a walk-off home run after putting together a four-run ninth inning. If you can't celebrate that, even in April, then you don't like sports, and you don't like watching sports. Honestly. Yeah, you were this close. It took 186 best year to remember video. Get you back.
It took a lot to pull me back, but, there are so many other things going on in the world of sports that make me think that this side of the earth is collapsing. And the Mets celebrating what has been a brief, fleeting, positive moment, a beacon of light, otherwise abysmal season. How is that? Like the human spirit, the triumph, you know, and back to the decline?
That is what's right with sports. If anything, that's exactly what's right with sports. That's why you watch sports. That's why Mets fans, as like people that don't understand, like non-sports, like my wife might be like, how could you get, you know, live and die by the Mets when they never are good? It's like the Jets. It's like, that's why you watch it, for that one little glimmer of something that's great. And like those little moments. You know, and a walk-off home run is great. I mean, did you see Johnny Gomes' walk-off home run last night where he came around third base, he took his helmet off, and he kicked it? I mean, that's awesome. But that's okay because they're in first place. So they're allowed to celebrate. But a last place team, not even a last place team, just a bad team, they're not allowed to ever smile on the baseball field until they become contenders. That's what it is in Bob Costas' little world. And he stinks. He's a jerk. And he's very, very rude.
Wrote the closing chapter in his book.
Yeah, I've been writing the front cover. Don't read this book. This guy stinks and he's very rude.
I'll write the forward for it.
There you go. I'm sure you will. Because you're a blossoming superstar in this industry, Neil. Let's stick with baseball. We'll stick with Harvey. Let's start with the All-Star game with Matt Harvey. Got his sixth win yesterday. what are the chances, you know, you figure he's going to have maybe three more starts, maybe four more starts before the All-Star game. What are the chances he could get to 7, 8, 9 wins? Is he going to possibly start in the All-Star game, and should he start in the All-Star game? I mean, you look at his ERA, whip, strikeouts are all right there, but if he goes to the All-Star break with 7 wins, is that enough for a manager to make him a starter? What are your thoughts?
It's tough to say because I feel like you know, he's just
going to
be a casual baseball fan. You have to admit that Harvey's been grabbing a lot of the headlines.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what the All-Star game is really about. I mean, it's all about the stars. It's all about who's in the media, who's getting the most buzz. I mean, take a look at Derek Jeter. The guy's not even playing. He's going to probably be starting somehow.
Yeah.
So I honestly do think that it would be a wise move to put Harvey out there. Some people will feel spited and persuaded.
Oh, the guy Corbin out in Arizona started out 9-0. I think he's at like he might have gotten his 10th win. He's been really good. Jordan Zimmermann has been great, but he's had a couple bad starts in a row now. That's the thing. There's a couple reasons why I think he should start. I don't think he should necessarily get penalized because his team can't give him a win. He can't hold the win for him. It's almost like the King Felix, you know, conundrum from a few years ago. He won the Cy Young with 13 wins. That's one. Two, if you really want to win the game, if you were to ask general managers right now in a big spot, who's the pitcher that you'd want starting in like game 7 of the World Series right now, I think a lot of general managers would have to say Matt Harvey's right up there with like a Clayton Kershaw and stuff. I don't think anybody would put Patrick Corbin ahead of him. So if you really want to make this game that means something, he's the guy. If you were to start a team from scratch, a Sandlot game, I think a lot of general managers would say, you know what, Game 7, let me get Matt Harvey out there because when his stuff is on, he's the only unhittable pitcher in the National League, with the exception of maybe.
You put him on any other team, and he's definitely not going to win.
Oh, of course, yeah. He hasn't had any really bad clunker starts. I think his worst start, he gave up 4 runs in like 7 or 8 innings. I mean, he hasn't had clunkers, and he's been amazing.
What's impressive to me about Harvey is that he'll have, like,
National League in strikeouts, first in whip, and third in ERA. He's only got 6 wins. Wainwright's the guy who's got 10 wins. And Wainwright, you could make a strong argument that he could be starting. I mean, he's 10-4. He's got great numbers as well. But I think that, you know, the tipping point has to be the fact that it's at Citi Field. And we got to remember what the All-Star game's all about. I mean, you remember last year when Robinson Cano didn't put Billy Butler in the home run derby and he got booed, and I thought it was awesome. And so you get an All-Star game at Citi Field. In front of, you know, there's going to be fans of all teams at the All-Star game, but there's going to be a lot of Met fans at that game. It's like the one thing they could root for, and that's what the All-Star game was started to see. It's so that you could see the stars. Yeah, to see the stars. Even back when all the games weren't, you know, televised, you could get one game where I get to see Mickey Mantle play if I live in Iowa or something like that. And so you have that, and that's where it's a tipping point. That's why I think he should start. He's got a couple. I just hope he can get 2 more wins at least, get to 8-1. I think that and keep that, you know, lead in the strikeouts and whip and be down, you know, top three in the ERA. How could you say he's not the starter? But it kind of leads us to the next question about the All-Star game. It's kind of always been a little bit of a sham when you have the fans voting that the best players don't necessarily start in the All-Star game, which actually does play a big impact because when, you know, these guys' careers are over and they're vying for the Hall of Fame, people tend to look at how many All-Star game appearances they have, you know, and if you're stuck in a small market that doesn't turn out votes, it hurts you, which kind of makes, you know, mockery of the whole process from start to finish, from All-Star game to Hall of Fame. But this year, it has gotten completely ridiculous. Now, they always run these campaigns, these teams, but my father had emailed me to bring it up on the show like a month ago, and I figured we'll wait till it got closer to the All-Star game. But he lives down in Florida. When you watch the Marlins broadcast, they actually have commercials running. But if you go to Marlins.com or whatever it is, and you fill out 25 All-Star ballots, you get 4 free tickets to the game. Now, what makes no sense to me about this is they get, you know, they're going to get a player because every team gets a player still, right? In the All-Star game in Major League, every team has one representative. They're never going to get a guy to start. The only guy that would possibly be All-Star eligible would be Mike Stanton. He's missed the whole season. So what is even the point of it? Like, who do they think is going to get voted on to the All-Star team from the Miami Marlins? Adney Echevarria? Who are they bringing in there? Greg Dobbs? I mean, that's one thing. And I'm like, all right, that's the Marlins. But then you got the New York Mets. Now, it was either you, I think it was you that brought up the Cougar Life top 10 hottest Cubs. Was that you or Tony Diggs? It was you during the day segment. And David Wright won, running away. And he should because he's with the jawline and everything. You guys are stud muffins. But the Mets, some genius over at the Mets decided, why not reach out to Cougar Life and see if they could promote him and try to draw, they have 400 followers or whatever, people signed up, or 400,000 people signed up for Cougar Life. Let's see if they could run some promotions on Cougar Life to get David Wright the starting talent. That is embarrassing. That is something that's the end of the Western civilization, that the Mets are so desperate that they have to reach out to CougarLife.com. Have you ever heard the commercials for Cougar Life? They're downright scary. Yeah, you were this close.
It's too intimidating. I'm already pretty intimidated by Cougars. And then I got to throw these jingles around where it's like, coming to a nail.
Yeah. There's whips going on in the background.
Yeah.
That's embarrassing. The next thing is what Boomer and Carton is doing. And they've been criticized by people in their own station. They've got this Friday, they've got the Boomer and Carton sweatshop where they're having 12 lovely ladies come in there and punch as many All-Star ballots for David Wright as they can. And they've got 2 buses full of fans that they're raffling, are doing all kinds of contests to get those things filled. So the bus is going to have David Wright's picture on the side, and they're going to be filling out ballots on the way to and from the game, and they're going to go for David Wright bobblehead day. I don't know. Yeah. Or you're not off the bus until you can do 1,000 ballots. But they have a whole system. They have a whole system. They're using paper clips, and they're putting a bunch of ballots together. You're just going straight down. So
I can't believe I graduated college.
You would have never thought of that. But I don't have any problem with that. See, that's completely different than in an organization giving away free tickets or linking up with Cougar Life. These guys are sports talk radio, and that's like what they do. And they're representing the fans. I have no problem. And to compare that to with the Mets and Cougar Life, it's apples and oranges, in my opinion. This has been going on forever where they run gimmicks on sports talk shows or, you know, think about like when Yao Ming was big, like China would run like every Chinese citizen have to vote for Yao Ming or they didn't get like food.
They killed their kid.
You better vote for Yao. And like, you know, Ichiro would win that running away when he first came to League of Legends. He should have. But, you know, we had this huge Japanese contingency of people that would be voting overseas. I don't have any problem with that because that's run by fans and regular people or stuff like that. That's completely different. So for people in their own station to criticize that is dumb because it's good for the station to have David Wright starting. It's a good story to cover. And they're representing the fans and they're getting the Mets fan something to do, you know, and kill the time. Do you have a problem with Boomer Carter doing?
No, it just bothers me that
Yeah, he's having a better season than Kung Fu Panda. And besides the fact that Panda's hurt, you know?
Exactly. So, this is where I get a little confused. I understand the Ultimate Game is for the fans, but at the same time, there's got to be some kind of rule implemented about, you know, minimum requirements or something like that. You know, I just feel like you have to have a certain number of, you have to meet a certain number of criteria. Like, their cheers should not be, you know, I'll start
here. Yeah, it shouldn't be. But still, they put the ballots out so soon. When I went to the Met game back at the end of April, the ballots had already been out for a couple of weeks. I mean, how are you voting for somebody in the All-Star game on April 20th? You know, it's insane. But
we
sure did back then, because they were like, I mean, the guy's the best catcher in baseball. I mean, you know, maybe next week we could wait a little bit, but we should do our ballot for who we like. You know, I think, you know, because there's a question about Daniel Murphy. Is he having an All-Star caliber season? I don't think he is. As much as I like Daniel Murphy, I don't think he's a top two second baseman in the National League, but we can get into that another day. But we should give maybe next week, so give some thought to it. Next week we'll give our All-Star ballot for the American National League. But I agree with you. I mean, the reason that Sandoval is winning is because the San Francisco Giants sell out every game. And they just have a rabid fan base. So how is that any different? It doesn't mean that they're the best player. So how is that any different than what Boomer Carter doing? I mean, it's all just about a popularity contest, and they're just going to say, well, we're going to make him popular. He should be. I mean, you know, if he wins it, it's because he does genuinely deserve it. How he gets there is a little weird, but I don't have any problem with Boomer Carter doing, to be honest with you. I mean, David Wright should be starting at third base, regardless of whether the game's at Citi Field or not. He deserved it from his play on the field. He's the best third base in the National League this year. And, again, you could ask any GM in baseball who they'd rather have, David Wright or Pablo Sandoval, and 30 out of 30 are going to take David Wright. There's not a question in my mind that would be the case, right? Kung Fu Panda's fat and he's always hurt. I love him. He's on my face again. I love him. Kung Fu Panda has fractures in his feet just because he's fat. Like, his feet just break from running around. Like, he's just, they can't support his gut. That's just a fact of biology. I don't know how else to explain it. His bones and his feet crack from running around pieces. That's a fact. That's not an opinion. That's not me being Bob Costas and editorializing. The fact of the matter is, he runs and his feet break. I don't know. If I'm a GM, I'm not investing a lot of money in the Panda as much as his talent.
Or you
got to
work with Dr. Scholl to come up with some kind of...
Will they have that thing where you stand on a thing and it tells you where your problem areas are? I would love to have him stand on that thing at CVS where it tells you, like, where you need some support. It would be
like... I feel like we're at the point now where he probably would be getting
robots. Just do it. And he would still rake. He'd still hit bad balls out, and that'd be his thing. He's awesome. I love him. He's not David Wright. And I'm not the guy who thinks that David Wright's, you know, an all-time great. He's an all-star and, you know, and all that, but he's better than Kung Fu Panda. That's just a fact. That's not really debatable. I don't know, you know. But that's really all I got in the All-Star game. I mean, the only other thing I have to ask you is this. We talk about our favorite player currently. Our favorite non-Met right now in the National League is?
Yeah, Puig.
Now, the guy's only, I think he's got, I don't know, 30 some odd at bat. He's clearly not going to be an all-star because, you know, he didn't come up until very late. But if you're putting together a team that you want to win because it matters for home field advantage in the World Series, is there any question he's one of the best outfielders in the National League right now? And in a big spot off the bench, you wouldn't want him in there? Is it insane to think that as one of the coaches' selections, they would put Yasiel Puig, even though he's going to come into the All-Star game with maybe 80 FS? Is that crazy to think?
No, not at all. I mean,
he would get killed for doing it.
Why, though?
Because of all this. I mean, we just talked about how insane it is, how the selection process works. But so it's Bochy, obviously, the head coach, right? There's no way he could do it. There's no way he's going to be able to do it. He should. Without a doubt, because if you're in a big spot in the ninth inning and you need a bat off the bench, who's going to be better right now coming in than Yasiel Puig? Nobody. We're gonna wind up looking at he's not going to make the team, even though it makes sense baseball-wise. And we're going to look at this roster and their offensive players, and we're going to say Yasiel Puig gives a better chance to win than half of the guys on that lineup that are named to the team by the coach. That's just a fact, I think. I don't know why that's not brought up more. Why can't he be an all-star? I haven't really heard it mentioned anywhere, but he should be. If it's about winning the game, because it determines home field advantage, and if you're a team that thinks, it's big for us, the San Francisco Giants have home field, why would you not put a guy like that in there?
I mean, is it possible? We still have when did they announce the actual teams? Is that happening, next week?
I think it's like July 4th, around July 4th, like right after July 4th weekend, or, you know.
So you don't think that he continues to maul the baseball and plays for over the next 2 weeks that they can't make an exception? I feel like it doesn't look like 13 games in now, and he doesn't appear to be letting up.
His only downside is his punch. He can't throw a punch. Yes, he's a slapper. He's not a good fighter.
Yeah.
Him and Bob Costas would be like an even pick'em in Vegas.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, he is. He. But I mean, if you want to win games, I'm gonna pull up his stats. I want to see how many at bats he has before we move on, because I'll be curious to see. We could try to figure.
48 at bats, 7 runs, 23 hits, 2 doubles, 4 home runs, 10 RBIs, 1 stolen base, 1 walk, 479 batting average. 500 on base percentage, 771 slugo, 1.271 OPS. I mean, if he continues on this streak, you're looking at another, we have 23 games, which...
the guy spent 479. He can't possibly stay on this. He spent 479. That's insane. There are plenty of decent softball players I know. I'd be curious to see if Tony D is hitting 479 in slow pitch softball. And that's dead serious. And Tony D is a good athlete.
They
did
say Tony D is the
That's why he wasn't even on this roster to start the season. Now he's like an integral part of their offense. Now all of a sudden they can't lose. I'm playing wood bat softball down at the beach, and we need Tony D. He is. That's what it is. Well, and he brings the ladies. He's single now. The chicks dig a single Tony D. He does very well with the ladies. You know that. In your short time being around Tony D, you know that.
I chuckle when he picks me up at the train station. Yeah, I usually try to get in there. Plus, with him, usually. He both types of his secrets. He's not going out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Tony D. Bro. That's my Tony D.
Come on, book.
Yeah. Bro. Yeah, I got my, that's all I got from Tony D. Bro. I've got Rosie Perez, who did we do last week? The maid from Family Guy, who you said sounded like Cruz, or Penelope Cruz.
Yeah.
And Tony D. We've got a lot. I mean, you could maybe find a role for me in Blackout. I could play Tony D.
Yeah, that's how we're going to keep the show. We got multiple.
That's all I do. That'll be like in the thing. It'll be like, bro, what is a quiche?
That's how he's like open. Bro.
Then you wake up, yeah, like lost style. That's how you do it. And then we get bad robot at the end. All right, we're not going to have a say what today. So why don't you get in the days? Maybe we've got 25 minutes left, so we give a nice day segment out of you. Dude, are you serious? Everyone's favorite segment. I want to hear what you got this week. You've actually been ahead of the curve because you brought up this Cooper-like thing weeks ago. You know that. A lot of these things are way ahead of the curve, and then people follow up about it. The Mets clearly were listening. They're like, did you hear about this David Wright thing at Cooper-like? Neil was rapping about it. What do you got, dude? The sports world, we sure as heck fire do.
So, I read this on Barstool. There's a new the Christmas version.
Yeah, what is that? What were you trying to say?
I still you. I got Christmas on the brain. The Anchorman 2 trailer came out. Supposedly the movie's coming out for Christmas, so I got Christmas on the brain right now.
How much editing do they need for that movie? They've been filming that movie for 3 years. This is going to have some CGI stuff going on. How is that coming out for Christmas? That's what it is. They got the big J.J. Abrams. What do you got?
So, the University of Texas Longhorn basketball man has gone to the school record in 54 straight home and road games over the past 7 years.
So what sport? Football? Basketball? Or just off? Well, good for him. He's a big line. He got to watch the Kevin Durant era. Yeah, that's insane. Yeah, to watch college basketball. I mean, I know some UConn fans don't miss a game.
Well, you know, they're not currently a powerhouse in basketball. They're just a primarily good football team, even more so than a baseball team. So it's not true that there's got to be some diehard about it. Like, what's the payoff, dude? It's not like you're going to win anything. Although maybe they get depressed now. It'll probably be like there's their honorary mascot or something.
Which gets you what? You're the honorary mascot of the Longhorns basketball team. I mean, he must have been a sad day when Kevin Durant declared after his one great year. Like, come on!
Their streak almost ended that day. You don't know. So I've said this before. I don't get why celebrities and athletes feel the need to say this. Like, but the University of Florida Gators linebacker Antonio Marshall punched a bouncer in the face for charging him a cover for
Why do they do that? Exactly. When is that ever like, okay, it must work sometimes. And we don't hear about 90% of it.
Yeah, I mean, we just hear the 1% of it, I guess. But, you know, I will make this vow here and now. You know, you and I are already pretty famous.
Yeah.
We're probably like B-list right now. Right?
Yeah, we could get on one of those reality. We could get on Dancing with the Stars right now.
Tomorrow.
And you're in. That's the level we have. We are not at the point where you can say no.
Sure.
We're at the stage of Carlton from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Do you ever think there's going to be a point in your life where you're going to have to break out? Do you know who I am?
Never in my life. Never in my life. I will. Can I tell you an embarrassing story? True.
Of course.
This is embarrassing, and I feel so bad. So I'm a senior in high school. I was very, very confident about myself when I was a senior in high school. And I've humbled a lot since then, as you know. And there were these two guys who I was like friends with since kindergarten. But by the time I'm a senior in high school, I'm like, oh, I'm gonna beat these here, you know what I mean? I got to a fight with one of these kids in the locker room, our baseball locker room. And I remember having him like, you know, buy the shirt and telling him, do you know who the F I am? And to this day, I actually apologized to this guy like at our 10-year reunion. I was like, I've never been more like embarrassed about anything I've ever said in my life. And I was like, I don't know. And the guy would have kicked my ass. I mean, I was not a big guy. But I have said that, so I can't lie and say I never said it to like get into anything. I just said it like in the heat of a fight. And that is the most embarrassing. So I vowed I will never, ever in any circumstance say that again. Because that'll like keep me up at night. You know, when you think of like bad things you've done. I'm putting that as like top five worst thing I've done in my life. That's how embarrassed I am saying that. But I feel like, you know, the fans need to know I'm not a phony. I did say it, and I'm completely embarrassed by it. Now, do you think less of me now for saying that?
No, I think you got out of your system.
Yeah.
I haven't dropped it yet. I haven't pulled that card. So maybe that's on the horizon.
Well, you get one. Just hope it's not on camera, dude. See, that was, thank God that was before, you know, camera phones. Because that would have been all over the place on YouTube. Mike DePalma, mediocre high school quarterback, F some kid who the F, you know the FIM. He should have just said, yeah, you're the guy who's a 500 quarterback in Fairfield County football. Oh, yeah, some guy in the background would have been, oh, Tony D would have jumped in the scene.
Bro.
Bro. World star. Segway King, Nia Lynch. Oh, did you hear, there was a caller at the Boomer and Carton, this lovely woman named Ebony, who went off and was like, I bought my Chanel purse, and they're going to tell me that I'm going to keep it. She's like, I'll be the best purse smuggler in Giant Stadium. That's what she said. She's going to teach people on YouTube how to smuggle purses in there. And they were like, she's like, what do you keep in there? She goes, a backup thong. Because what if I go home with somebody that night? I need another thong in the morning. This girl's going to Giants games in hopes of picking up a guy. You're seeing, like, I don't know about Giants, but at a Jet game, yeah, you got to search out Ebony, Neil. But, like, you have a lovely lady now. You're on date number 10. Isn't that always the case? You're single, you can't get a date. You get a girlfriend, and it's like, you know, every girl wants you, Neil. I mean, that seems like a Neil Lynch slam dunk to me. Backup thong in the Chanel purse?
Backup thong, that's very secure. They're all hands down. You put it right behind. I mean, people wonder why I put on cologne before I go to the Giants game. But for women like that.
Yeah. Why would you need a backup to not just be like granny pants? Because that's on your way out. Why would it need to be just because you got to get right back on the scene? Maybe on the train ride home, you pick somebody else up.
YOLO.
You wake up Monday morning, you think you're going to work. No. I mean, even after a Sunday football game, maybe needing a backup thong. So, yeah, girls are furious about that. She does not know. She also does not attend many Jet games. Early on in our relationship, she was a big, oh, my God. Do you know what? I just got a text from my wife. This is odd. My phone just beeped. You know who just died? Tony Soprano.
Really?
James Gandolfini, heart attack at 51. You heard it here first. That's horrible. That's hard. I mean, I didn't mean to steal your thunder on Dude, Are You Serious, but
no,
Dude, Are You Serious? I mean, that's an icon.
That's the epitome of Dude, Are You Serious? I mean, you can't say that it's a surprise, though, in the way that he's living all those years. It takes a toll on your body, you know? And, you know, my father passed away from a heart attack when he was 66, and I thought he was in pretty good health. So, I mean, if you're overweight, and like,
that's horrible.
All that pasta, if you're a pasta eater and you like your pasta, you go heavy on the sauce.
Yeah, the bread, the oil, and all that, and the prosciutto and gabagol and all that, it's going to catch up with you.
They eat like king. Yeah, they eat like king. That lifestyle and diet doesn't just do, you know, you going very far.
I was surprised to find he's only 51.
We
got to confirm that. I don't know. My wife could be punking us. I don't know. He could be at my friend's door right now. I don't know. But yeah, she probably hears me and saying, like, you know what, screw you. I'm going to tell you a bad story. But we got to look at it. It's got to be everywhere on MSN or Twitter or whatever. But, yeah, 51 seems really young because Sopranos was over 10 years ago. I mean, when the Sopranos started, he was in his 30s? That can't be right. It's flashed as a studio, though.
Trying to wipe up a Boomer fan. I mean, this is what, yeah. Got my ribs out.
Yeah, he died. I'm getting it on Twitter. Yeah, rest in peace, James Gandolfini. He will be missed. I don't have an age on him yet, but, man, that's horrible. That stinks. All right, well, what else you got? I mean, I don't want to kill it. I want to hear the segue from that to whatever you got next on Dude, Are You Serious? You got to earn your money here, buddy.
Yeah. So that was unexpected. Yeah. I have no segue to that. I'm sorry. I just got to go to the next one.
Can't even, yeah.
Have you seen LeBron in his shoes?
No.
latest Nike LeBron 10 or X Low. I don't know when it's supposed to release, but if you look at the insole of both sneakers, it reveals an 11-12, and then below that a 12-13 graphic, and it says two-time champion.
No way.
Yeah.
There's no way that's true. This is when we need Tony D, because he is a shoe guru. He works in the shoe industry. You know that.
That was for Tony D, bro.
Wow.
And they are, it's like glow-in-the-dark FC91, you know, the BK Knights or whatever they're called, that light up when you walk in there.
Yeah. Do they have like little wheels in the bottom, like the little kids that are going through the mall? You know those kids now, they have those like sneakers with wheels on the bottom? You must have that in Jersey. They're the most annoying thing.
I had a pair, but I wiped out.
I bit it. I ran into the hockey coach. I will tell you this. So he was born September 18th, James Gandolfini, 1961. So he was only 51 years old. He died in Rome, Italy. That's a pretty badass way to die, though, in Rome.
Yeah, I mean, if that kind of cuisine is going to knock you out, might as well do it in the homeland.
Sopranos started in 99. So when The Sopranos started, he was 38 years old. Which means when they were filming that first season, he was like 37. God, I'm 32, Neil.
Yeah,
I'm almost as old as Tony Soprano was.
We got 5 years to start.
Yeah. We're gonna give this whole Tri-State Sports guys another 6 months, and if not, I'm going to a life of crime. It is what it is. I got a solid V-neck T-shirt on. I don't know if you see that.
People appreciated the wife beater last week.
I didn't go beater last week. I thought maybe that was a little aggressive, so I toned it down. Yep. Well, you're Kanye. You know what I mean? And I don't even know who I would be with a wife beater, but something. And that's who we are. So what else you got next, buddy? Segue that.
So, I probably wouldn't rock those shoes. I don't think you would rock those shoes either, but I don't think either of us would rock those shoes. Know what company this is. It comes from USA Today Sports. They're called Gambler Cleats. And in the ad,
Gambler
Cleats. In the, this cannot be right.
We gotta start fact checking everything. We need like a guy like Tony Leal. Let's go to the fact check.
If you're listening or if you're watching, go to warriorgambler.com, and there's an opening screen that you see right there.
Yeah.
It says it lists all the features, right? So it shows the shoe that has all the different call outs, the different features, but it's the sneaker design, sticker spike, blah blah blah. But and one of the call outs, it points to the back of the shoe that has a little hole, and it says Flurry hole for precision fit in the situation.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, go to warriorgambler.com.
It's going to, like, give me a virus, dude.
Well, see, this is how I move up the main man. You get the virus, you get the care of it, and I pro-hop you, leapfrog you, with the power of sleep.
All right. I will tell you, I just looked up that LeBron James thing. Yeah, they're atrocious, and they're $249.
Yeah, no thanks. I'll pass this time around, but
Hey Neil, we're gonna take a call quick here, all right? I'm gonna have to mute you for a second. We got a caller who's been waiting on hold quite some time. I know we said we were gonna take some calls, but this poor guy's been waiting. Hopefully he's got something great. Maybe some breaking story, maybe some more information about James Gandolfini. We'll see. We're going to go out to line two here. You're on with the Tri-State Sports guys. Who's this?
This is Bobo.
Bobo, where my man? How we doing, buddy?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. Yeah, that is tragic.
Did you hear about Tony Soprano?
Bobo,
hold on. Did you hear about Tony Soprano? He died today.
Yeah, I know. I heard. That's freaking sad. Just what a coincidence. I was talking to my cousin about how they would work it if they did a movie of The Sopranos.
Your cousin and the guy? Oh, there was a Sopranos movie. I got you. And they were playing on LA all week. Last week they were playing that guy who does the Tony Soprano impression. I mean, what are the chances of that?
I know. What a coincidence. But I was talking to my cousin about how we were trying to figure out how they would do that movie, because we all know so many guys got whacked.
Yeah, but you know they could probably have to pick it up from that scene in the diner, right, and just figure out what happened when the guy walked in.
Yeah, that's what I figured, that the whole movie was going to begin with that final scene in the last episode, and I was thinking like a whole flashback thing of how Tony got to where he is.
Yeah, that's actually a good call. Talk about everything leading up to season one of The Sopranos. Do a little backstory, like Godfather 2 thing. Maybe a little more about Junior and how he became, you know, so powerful and all that. It's a good call, Bobo.
Well, I guess in a way you could say, I don't know if it's okay to joke, but I guess if people said that they think the last episode ended, Tony got whacked. Well, that answers your question. I guess he is sleeping with the fishes.
Out in Rome, yeah, it's horrible. So what do you got? Are you calling in to talk about Soprano, or you want to talk a little bit about Harvey Day and Wheeler Day?
Well, I have to say, that I was going to talk about too, but also Harvey and Wheeler Day. If you ask me, that was a big celebration at my house.
Oh, yeah, me and my father were watching the game. It was fantastic. It's a great thing.
Yeah, I never felt that felt like what it should feel like. What it should feel like. That felt like that feeling I haven't felt since 2006.
Yeah, it felt good. Let me ask you this. I don't know how much you listen to the show, but did you hear Bob Costas' comments, Bobo, about the Mets when they celebrated for Newman Heights? What a jerk Bob Costas is. What gives him the right to tell Mets fans they can't celebrate when a guy hits a 3-run walk-off home run after putting together a 4-run ninth? What a jerk, right? Did you hear those comments?
Excuse me. I think he should have let the Mets alone about that. They were celebrating a win. They felt great about it. They have every right to celebrate a win like that.
Yeah, if you can't celebrate the Mets win, then why do you even watch sports, you know?
Exactly. I was attending the game myself.
Oh, wow. That must have been, the place must have come down.
Yeah, I was like excited. That whole win made it easier to handle the bad mood I was in that day, being that it was Father's Day, and people who know me know I lost my dad at a very young age.
Yeah, that was brutal. And then I did not know that, Bobo. I'm sorry to hear that. And then they had that terrible three-error play where they're throwing the ball around, and it looked like, man, they had hit rock bottom. And then they come back and win that game, and you got stupid Bob Costas telling us we can't be excited and the Mets can't celebrate. What a jerk. And the people want to make this guy the next commissioner of baseball. What are they thinking?
Who the heck knows? Bob Costas, please, all right? I get a freaking annoyed with his freaking – he needs to freaking narrate freaking everything. This guy is like the Ryan Seacrest of sports. Everywhere, yet he's freaking annoying.
Yeah, exactly. Well, why do they elevate him to this godlike status in sports? What's he ever done? He just uses big words and people are impressed by him.
Yeah, that's all he does. Just uses these big words and then this, and as I said, narration is freaking everything.
Exactly. So, all right. So how excited are you about Wheeler and what you saw, Bobo? I mean, we really got a solid 1-2, or is this going to be a repeat of, the Mets arms from the late 90s? Are these guys the real deal? They're going to hold up or what?
Yeah, I think this is good. I think this is going to be actually the real deal. Like, this is going to be what we all thought Generation K was going to be.
I hope so, my man. You gonna try to get on the Boomer Carton bus and punch some ballots for D. Wright or what?
Well, I already did. I punched a bunch of them at Modell's. I did that when I purchased that All-Star Game apple today.
Oh, nice. Good for you. That's a good Mets fan right there. I like that, Bobo.
Yep, I got that. And I got a little nice little gift from my brother in the West Coast.
What would you get him?
No, I got a gift from him.
Oh, from him. Okay, what did he get you?
Well, because he's on the West Coast, he's not far from Las Vegas, out of Southern California. He makes some trips out there. Well, he caught a game out there. You know, the Mets have their AAA team there. He sent me a Zach Wheeler signed ball.
No way! That's fantastic. That's a great gift. Was it your birthday or something, or you just give it to you for nothing?
It was a late birthday present.
Well, congratulations, Bobo. That's great. Well, Bobo, we only got a couple minutes left in the show, so me and Neil got to wrap it up. But don't be a stranger. You got to call in more often, all right, buddy?
All right, I'll call in more often. And I
all
believe
right,
it's the. And I got to remember what it was I was told by the. I was contacted by the O&A people. I think it's the 29th I'm going to be on the show.
Is that 29th of June?
Yep, the 29th of June. I'll be on there. I don't know what time I'm going to be on there, but some point during that day's show, I'll be in studio for the first time in ages.
Yeah, well, that's fantastic. We'll promote the crap out of it for you, Bubba. We'll let everybody know in the Tri-State Sports Guys world, tune in, listen to you. You got to be an entertaining guy while you're on there, right, brother?
All right, no problem. You guys have a great day. I guess you guys are going to the All-Star Fan Fest, so I'll see you guys there.
All right, we're going to try to make it out there, and if we do, I'll make sure I find you. All right, pal?
That's
the great Bobo from Queens. He's a great listener, a great caller. And he'll be on O&A on June 29th, Neil. What do you think about that, brother?
What day is that? Is that a Saturday?
That would be a Saturday, yeah. Which I don't think O&A is on the air on Saturday, but we're going to have to iron out the details then. Maybe he's going to be on the Davey Mack Sports Show. But we got to iron out the details there. But that's great, Bobo checking in. I mean, was that the new Nice game? What do you think about that?
I mean, that's the Bobo magic at work right there.
I mean, Bobo's a big-time celebrity. Bobo could also get himself on Dancing with the Stars. He's at our level celebrity, I think, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that it's going to come down to the three of us if they can somehow get the two of us on one check at once. I mean, if you're first,
I agree. All right, Neil, you want to wrap up, dude? Are you serious? And then, you know, maybe we'll get into some bonus time. We can get into some golf.
Rapid fire. You want to talk about the decline of Western civilization?
Yes.
Okay, so one right after the other, and you can just give your nod of approval. A sports editor was charged with human trafficking. U.S. Open spectators are heckling Sergio Garcia with pride. There was a warrant out for a NASCAR driver who allegedly stole competitor vehicles. Allen Iverson was accused by an ex-wife of abducting his children. Kerry Rhodes claims to be the father of Kim Kardashian's baby.
Kerry, pause, pause.
Alabama put a waterfall in a freaking locker room. I mean,
out of all those stories, the Kerry Rhodes one tops the cake.
I know he's a big Kim K fan.
What's that? Time the hump trying to say that was his baby. It's basically everyone's child other than Kanye West.
Yeah, why does everyone want a piece of that
baby? Yeah, it's gonna stink. And you know what? They're gonna you've seen. I mean, who knows about Paris Hilton now? Nobody. What's Paris Hilton done in the last 3 years? Nicole Richie. They're nobody. There's gonna be
but
some
hot track, and a nice perfume. I got a family.
Oh, yeah, a little sample piece for your lovely lady. That's a good gift.
For the morning after.
Yeah, you get your backup song and a little gift from Paris Hilton. All right, well, that's the end of our live show with the Tri-State Sports Guys. Check us out every week, tristatesportsguys.com, facebook.com/tristatesportsguys, and Twitter @tristatesports. We have a quick bonus time. We're not going to give you the full half hour yet. I don't think we need to do all that. I think we just need to talk a little bit about golf. There's another exciting U.S. Open. Kind of a weird course to have it at this place outside of Philly. It's kind of a, you know, people were talking about this course is going to be one of the easier courses for the U.S. Open, and I don't know if the weather conditions has something to do with it. Obviously, the way they always cut the rough in the U.S. Open is going to make it difficult, but as you saw, nobody broke par for the tournament, and Justin Rose wins it at one over. Really, the story of it was Phil Mickelson. And the question to start out with is, the fact that he's been the runner-up six times in the U.S. Open, it makes him sort of the Buffalo Bills of golf to an extent. But the guy does have four majors. It's just like he's never won a major. It's just this one particular major. And I think, you know, years from now, people are going to look back and think of how amazing it is that this guy was runner-up six times. You know how hard it is to be a runner-up in the U.S. Open six times? And it's like, okay, this guy's not – nobody's ever going to say Phil Mickelson's the greatest golfer of all time. But he's in the top 20, at least.
He's one of the most liked golfers on the circuit.
So what do you think that's about? That's a great segue, and that's why you make the big buck. What do you think his likability is about? Is it his personality? Is it the fact that he plays golf with that kind of reckless abandon that everybody thinks that they would play golf if they played in the PGA? Is it the fact that he's got this gorgeous wife who is like a cancer survivor and all of that? Or is it, and I think this might be the winner here, that he is the anti-Tiger Woods during the Tiger Woods era. And every great golfer, every great athlete needs, you know, a nemesis. And this was his nemesis, and there are going to be people that don't like Tiger Woods and have to like the other person. You think that's the case? Where do you think that the reason for his popularity, or is it a combination of all?
I think the foundation of his fan base, where he got them from, were all the factors and elements that he mentioned earlier. Right? And then he just kept building upon that. The more that he came closer and closer to victory, that he fell short each time, there's something likable about that. You know, not necessarily the lovable losers, but the fact that he is this kind of underdog guy that he's not arrogant or pompous in the way that he plays. He's down to earth.
He's fat. That helps.
But then you add in the Tiger Woods element, the fact that he introduced this kind of hero to some, but anti-hero / villain to a lot of others for various reasons. You know, we all know the reasons. But he definitely was like, well, if Tiger Woods is the person that everyone wants me for, I'm going to go against the grain. And if you're going to do that, you can't get much more against the grain from Tiger than with Phil. But you can see the guy made bank finishing second.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people that I know would be completely content with that. But you saw him in the post. Unpolished, like John Daly. You know, he's a very nice, he just seems like a real guy.
you know, even the story about him flying home to see his daughter's eighth grade graduation and taking a red eye. I mean, it's such like a great story. Although, I mean, he's doing it on his private G5 jet and all that. It's not like, let's not pretend that he didn't get a good night's sleep on that jet and all. But it's like he could do no wrong at this point. And that all happened before even Tiger's facade came crashing down. It was, you know, when people still thought Tiger was the perfect person, he wasn't real to anybody. He was not the guy you could have a beer with or, you know, just go in the backyard. I mean, Phil Mickelson, you could play Babe Ruth with.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of Rocky IV, right? You have Ivan Drago, who's like manufactured in a lab somewhere, similar to Tiger Woods, and then you have Rocky Balboa, who's like, you know, the guy who's just kind of getting by off his guts.
That's the best analogy I've ever heard in my life. And I had not thought of that, but it's exactly what it is. Tiger Woods is Ivan Drago, and it's like, you know, and Phil Mickelson is Rocky Balboa. He's like the everyman, you know, guy, like every guy who is a decent golfer, not you and me, but the guy who, you know, is a 2 or 3 handicap, who plays a lot of golf, sees himself as, well, you know what, I could beat Phil Mickelson. Nobody thinks they could be Tiger Woods. Nobody.
Well, so that's why I'm making a bold prediction for 2014. I think it's going to come down to Tiger and Phil at the U.S. Open. And I think Phil's going to win, and he's going to make a speech similar to
that. Yeah.
Change.
We can all contain. Yeah. I'll tell you this. That's another good segue, because a lot of the things people are talking about is Tiger Woods been fantastic. Looks like the Tiger of old in non-majors and then in majors. And I think he finished 13 over this weekend. And it's like, is he ever going to get over this hump? It's been 5 years since he won a major. And even if he does, I mean, he'll win another major, I think. But he's never going to get back to where he was. And it's clear to everyone involved that both of these guys are eventually on the decline. I mean, Phil's 43. Tiger is a shell of himself. He's injured somehow playing golf. A guy that benches 350 pounds is always got some sort of ailment playing golf, which I know guys, my, you know, that are our age that play golf all the time. They seem to hang in there.
Sounds like A-Rod.
Exactly. Breaking down, my man. But my question to you, I like the little hand gesture there. That's my favorite part of the show. The little double guns. My question is, when these guys eventually, and it's happening in front of our eyes, and it'll probably be in the next 5 years, when they're no longer the top of golf, how bad is that for U.S. golf? Because we saw the numbers decline when Tiger Woods was out. Numbers in tournaments when Phil Mickelson's not playing or isn't doing well fall off the table. I mean, the Travelers Championship up in Cromwell, in Connecticut this weekend is going to get no ratings. You know, you know, I know a lot of people that go to it. It's fun to watch the tournament, local tournament. Cromwell's probably about an hour from Norwalk. I know a lot of people that'll drive up there to go see it. When that does happen, when they're just completely irrelevant and maybe they're just playing in majors and they're just like a token invitee to stuff, I mean, are we on the verge of U.S. golf becoming U.S. tennis, where it's dominated by European, and in the case of golf, it's also dominated by, you know, Asians and Australians and people from New Zealand and South Africa, and it's a more global sport than even tennis. And now you look at the decline of U.S. tennis. It's like, when is U.S. tennis ever going to get? I mean, we're hoping for James Blake, who's kind of fallen off the radar. Andy Roddick's now retired. I mean, when are we going to get somebody to galvanize ourselves behind after Sampras and Agassi? I mean, is that going to be the case? I mean, there's good American players out there, but none of them carry the kind of star power that those two guys have. And are we going to just wait for ESPN to manufacture one and tell us this is the next blah, blah, blah?
I mean, for me, being a casual golf fan, I feel like it's going to be personalities that maybe aren't, you know, at the top of the leaderboard, but that, you know, make the cut and that are constantly doing things to cause a stir, like Billy Horschel, for instance, is Octopus Man. I mean, that's all that people in the room could talk about when I was watching the U.S. Open, or is Octopus Man.
They were horrendous, and that's a one-time gimmicky thing. Like, that's not a long...
I feel like, hey, you know, the NHL is starting to realize that it's maybe it doesn't have the loyalist fans that NFL or baseball has, where they can just depend on cranking out the same product, and you know, eventually superstars will rise, will catch on. So maybe this is the route that golf has to take. They start wearing octopus pants and dress in all bright orange.
Yeah, that bright orange guy was another ridiculous sight to see, but. China, I think he's from China, that qualified for all these tournaments and plays really well, and you're like, I mean, where is America going to get something like that? They're going to need lightning in a bottle somewhere. Sports tells us that eventually something will come around that'll grab our attention, but, you know, I don't know. I think we're on the verge of a downtime for U.S. golf that'll last upwards of a decade, I think, because people are going to hang on to Tiger and Phil, and there'll be a long time where every major people are waiting, is this the Tiger thing, but that'll get old, and then nobody's going to care about him winning regular tournaments, and they're going to tune out of regular tournaments, because nobody's going to care that he won four tournaments and can't win a major.
I think it's going to, yeah, but you look at NASCAR, you have guys like Tony Stewart going after other drivers. Yeah, Tony Stewart almost never wins the points.
It's all Jimmy Johnson every year.
So yeah, Tony Stewart is the guy who's constantly doing like ridiculous things, like grabbing competitors' live buttons and like, you know, throwing his helmet at cars passing by. I mean, like, and he's in commercials, and he's noticeable, he's recognizable, and brand awareness. And I feel like, you know, just from a marketing standpoint, that's what golf is going to need. Golf is going to need someone who, okay, maybe he's a bad boy. He has a guy who's like clean cut. It's like, you know, it's like reality TV.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's reality TV. Whether you want to like it or not.
Yeah.
And I feel like if golf cannot, you know, you're going to have the traditionalist golf enthusiasts who are against that. They think, you know, they don't want it to turn into WWE.
But they're going
to
watch anyway, so who cares about this? The golf.
Right. If you want to build on your fan base to get involved, there's still younger guys out there who are interested in golf, but they're attracted to stories like that.
Yeah, there's still no better story than the young amateur making a run, improbable run. So you're going to need something like that, some 19-year-old to come out of nowhere and win the U.S. Open or something like that.
This happens in every sport. I mean, you know, you had, you know, the 90s original tour in 2000, I don't know if it really had anyone, and then LeBron came along. So I feel like every sport has that player. Just when you think of who's going to step up, who's going to fill the shoes.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, we spent a full half hour on golf and hockey today, which is great. We got a call from Bobo. We broke the story about Tony Soprano. This could go down as one of our best shows ever. Good riddance, Tony D. We both have it. We have to do like a contest. Who's got the best Tony D impression? We might have to have that. That's all we got. All right, well, that is the end of our show. That was our bonus time. We gave you an extra 15 minutes recorded time. Check us out every week. Like I said, Wednesdays, 8 to 9:30. Hit us up on our Facebook pages where we get a lot of our comments, but our website is doing very well. Hit-wise, Tony D's always got new content up there. I try to write articles whenever I can. They get no hits, but I'm working on a couple now. I'll try to get on there. Maybe I'll break triple digits on one of these. We'll see. But we are the Tri-State Sports Guys. I'm Mike. Neil's over in the Hoboken studio signing out. We're going to see you next week. I'm actually out next week. I'm going to break that story to you now, Neil. So you and Tony D are going to have to man the ship. My guest is Tony D. Has got. I'll call in. I just won't be on. I won't be back in studio until probably like 8:30. So we're going to need you to really come up with some good content, Neil. Solo style. No shot. We might be off next week. All right. We'll figure something out. All right. We're the Tri-State Sports Guys. Check us out next week. Thanks.